right, good evening, everybody. Good afternoon, good morning, and good night. This is the Fakeologist Show. It's Sunday, September 4th, 2022. I do this show Sunday through Thursday, usually at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time. But if I have a European guest, I start early. And that time is usually 1 or 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time, North America time. And today is such an occasion. And I know I have fewer listeners at this time live, but that's okay. Because most people download the show or watch the video. Now, tonight, I don't have a whole hell of a lot to share with you on the video screen. But actually, I'll probably share the book that we'll be discussing today. And today, my guest hails all the way over from, I think, Belfast, Ireland. And his name, I'm going to let him pronounce his name because I don't want to butcher it. So I'm going to welcome him right now to the show. Hello, James.
Hi, Mr. Fakeologist. My name is James McComiskey. I think in North America you might say Comiskey, but in Ireland we say Comiskey. So just James McComiskey. Comiskey Park in Chicago, I think, is a football stadium or a baseball stadium.
That's right.
Yeah. So I wrote a book called the Achilles Heel of the Biomedical Paradigm in 2021. Basically about the fact that viruses don't exist. Nobody's ever purified any virus. And that came on foot of a book I wrote a lot earlier in 2007 called The Ultimate Conspiracy of the Biomedical Paradigm, where I kind of outlined how modern medicine is wrong, but 95% of modern medicine is wrong. And I think the weak point of modern medicine, the Achilles heel, is the fact that the germ theory of disease is wrong and viruses do not exist.
Okay, what's the name of the book you just sent me now? Because I'm going to just save the file and then show it up on my screen so people can look at the front. What's the name of it again?
Sure. The Achilles Heel of the Biomedical Paradigm. And it's the COVID-19 coronavirus is on the picture. So I'm saying the Achilles Heel of the Biomedical Paradigm is the fact that, you know, we were locked down for 2 years because of this SARS-CoV-2 virus, allegedly. But the fact of the matter is nobody's ever purified it.
Well, I'm fully on board here, James. Let me just give some history. I'm trying my damnedest right now in my 55-year-old brain to remember how I got referred to you. I talked to many people.
John Wantling.
That's right, John Wantling. I was going to say Tracy Northern. Who is Northern
Tracy as well, yes.
Right. So you guys are in a pretty tight community, and that's really, I think we're just sharing information amongst all of us. So that's how it was. So I am going to share on my screen your book as we are talking. So that is the book, The Achilles Heel of the Biomedical Paradigm, James McComiskey. Mick Kaminsky. That's almost a tongue twizzler. Tongue twister.
Matt Comiskey, whichever way you want to say.
Matt Comiskey. Okay. All right. That's a tough one. I have some Irish in me. One of my wings of the family's from County Cork. So they got out when potatoes were sunk in the sea by our friends over in London.
Well, we won't go into that.
The Irish. Hollow Dormer, I think maybe is it's called. So just to also be clear, I know you wrote other books as well. And if you have time, I don't mind talking about any of this stuff as well. What were the names of the other books? I think you just sent me the Achilles Heel book, though.
Yeah, the first book I wrote was The Ultimate Conspiracy: The Biomedical Paradigm in 2007, and it's kind of like a broader. It was when I got into the German New Medicine of Dr. Ricky Gerhard Harmer, okay? So the real focus there was the five biological laws. And then as a side effect of that, I understood that viruses didn't exist. Now, this is back in 2006. where I would have understood all of this, and I sent letters off to politicians, etc., about the fact that viruses do not exist. And then I got into, from Dr. Enrique Gerdhammer, I got into the work of Dr. Stefan Lanke. And then Dr. Stefan Lanke is a marine biologist born in Germany in 1963. And he did a PhD where he discovered a small organism which had all the characteristics of a virus. And he thought it was he discovered the first non-pathogenic virus that affected the marine brown algae, sea algae. And basically what he discovered was that he could isolate it, purify it, biochemically characterize it. And then he was deemed to be an expert on viruses. And the HIV thing was at its peak in the 80s. And he discovered that nobody had ever isolated or purified the HIV virus. And then from that, he got into all the viruses that affect children that we vaccinate our children against, mumps, measles, rubella, etc. And there's no evidence that nobody's ever purified any of those alleged viruses. So the whole issue really is that, as incredible as it may seem to your average listener, and I was the same way back in the day, you just take it on face value, okay, virus, nobody's ever purified a virus. And then I started, writing letters to the health authorities in Ireland and the UK and Irish government officials, etc. And then what I...
Uh-oh. Oh, man. Sorry, guys. I think the call just dropped, so I'm going to call back. I'm trying to connect to him on a phone. Now, he's using a... Hey there, James? Oh, yeah, we got to wait till it rings. Who can ask? He's going to... As you know, I'm... Hello, James. 2212, James? You there? You know, one of the problems... James... Hello,
Tim. Sorry.
What happened there?
I cut off there.
Are you on a cell phone?
I have no idea. Yeah, I'm on a cell phone, yes.
Okay, that's good. Do you have a landline?
I do. But is this... I think this should be okay now, or will it cut out again in 10 minutes' time?
Well, I don't know. If you have do you mean you actually have an old-fashioned landline with copper? Because if I could call on that, that would be the best connection, if you don't mind.
Okay. Yeah. I have one. I'll give you the number.
Okay.
Wait.
If you don't want to give it over the air, just type it in the Skype chat. That would be smart.
Okay.
Unless you have fans. Okay. I mean, it's not like my fans are harmful or anything, but I give out my number, so it's up to you. Whatever you want, my friend. I just want the best connection. And we are very close to having an excellent, excellent connection. You there?
Well, I'm probably sticking the mobile for the moment. And it should be okay. No?
Okay. Well, I just thought the landline would be ultimate in connection.
I've got a guest, I've got a kind of a big house, and the landline is about two floors down at the moment.
All right, okay. Well, we'll stick to this. We'll stick to this. I just thought I just didn't want to get disconnected again. So if we get disconnected again,
then
we can do that. How about that?
Okay, fine, Tim. Yeah,
all right.
No worries.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm a stickler for good sound, and because I listen to a ton of audio, and I almost stop listening to stuff if I can't hear the guest. When I'm a audio listener, so that's why I'm a stickler.
And okay, no problem.
Yeah, it's even if it's the least informed guest, if they sound good, it sort of changes your whole attitude towards what they're saying. So that's my experience. But anyway, carry on. Hopefully we won't get cut off.
Okay. Just where were we just before I got cut off, and how I got into all of this?
Were at Lanke.
With Lanke. So Stefan Lanke discovered that, he discovered what he would now call a biont or a mini spore, which is this, and they're called giant viruses, which affect kind of sea algae. There's millions of them in 1 liter of seawater. And he discovered this, the ectocarpus silicosis, marine brown algae virus. and all the characters of the virus, a nucleic acid core and a protein shell. And he measured it, biochemically characterized it, and all the rest, and proved that it existed. And then he became aware that the HIV virus had never been isolated or purified. He also became aware that mumps, measles, rubella virus, etc., had never been isolated or purified. And I should say there was a Canadian biologist, David Crowe from Alberta. He had a website called The Infectious Myth. He interviewed me a couple of times on the show.
Yeah.
And I mean, David understood. I wasn't clear, but over time he understood that nobody had ever purified any virus.
Yes. I was a big fan of David. And actually, I may have been the last person to interview him before he died. So.
Oh, Lord.
I know. It's crazy. It's really crazy.
He was such a nice guy, you know.
Yes. I think he had a BA in or BSc in science. I think he was in chemical something, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. I think he had a degree in biology, and he had a good understanding of biology, but he worked in telecoms for, I think, most of his life. But he retained the interest in biology, and he obviously had a particular interest in viruses and the whole virology thing.
Yeah, I'm not even quite sure how he got into the whole thing. But how did you get into the whole thing? Why are you looking into this? I mean, why did you look into this? Because now in 2022, everyone should be looking into this. But why were you looking into it so early? What inspired you?
Okay, well, what inspired me was that, first of all, so I came across Dr. Lanka, and then he had a magazine called Klein Klein Action, which means small, small actions in English. And basically with a colleague of his called Carl Krafelt, Carl Krafelt had this idea that if ordinary people went to the authorities and asked them for proof of the existence of various viruses, that this would create such a groundswell that the authorities would be forced to admit that viruses do not exist.
What was the guy's name?
That was way back. Carl Krafelt. He worked with, he's dead now, but he was a colleague of Dr. Stefan Lanka.
Oh, okay.
And I took up the challenge. Carl Krafelt, Krafeld.
Okay, I'm going to look that up just for fun, because that's actually a pretty good idea, what he just said.
No, I'll go on further on that one, actually, is... So I took up the challenge in Ireland initially, and then because I'm Irish, I live in Ireland, but also the UK, because I moved up to Belfast, Northern Ireland is part of the UK.
Right.
And I challenged the UK authorities as well. So I did the Irish authorities, the UK authorities. But I should also say that there's a lady in Toronto, Christine Massey.
Yeah, I know. I've talked to her twice.
Twice in Peterborough, Ontario, and she's done it for... So I've focused in on the National Virus Reference Laboratory, the National Virus Reference Laboratory attached to the University College Dublin School of Medicine. But she's done it... So I've just focused in on one organisation in Ireland, and obviously one organisation in England, the Public Virus Reference Department at Public Health England. But what Christine has done is quite interesting. She's done institutions all over Canada, the US, and all over the world. And I think she's got FOI requests in or whatever from about 159 of them.
Yeah.
And they're all saying that nobody's ever, they have no record of anybody ever isolating or purifying any virus.
Right.
So she's taken it further from that point of view. But I mean, really, it's incredible. You know, in many ways, what I find astonishing about all of this stuff is that I've done my FOI request, say, to National Virus about the SARS-CoV-2 virus, about the HIV virus, about mumps, measles, rubella, and they come back and they say no record exists, and it's all very formal. No record exists. This is not the method we use. We do not purify any virus. They've admitted that in the FOI request, and I think I sent you a few of those documents. But
yeah.
Then I appealed their decisions on a number of times to the Office of the Information Commissioner. So in the Republic of Ireland, the Office of the Information Commissioner is, if you're not happy with an FOI request, and on a couple of occasions now, they have gone into the National Virus Reference Laboratory in Dublin and asked them what the issue was and gone into it in more detail. But basically, and they've had to give them a much more detailed response. But basically, you know, what seems incredible, but they just use indirect methods for the detection of any virus. They do not use any direct method. In other words, they're working on the assumption that viruses exist, and they use these indirect methods to detect viruses. But when you challenge them about why nobody's ever been able to purify a virus, and by the way, I got the word purify from David Crowe. David Crowe said that the virologists had abused the word isolated. For example, that they say if you allegedly have SARS-CoV-2 and you cough out a sputum, they say that the sputum is an isolate,
right?
Which defies kind of logic. The sputum is sputum, then you'd have to isolate the virus from the sputum, but they call the sputum the isolate.
Right.
I read that in the paper.
Yes,
they actually call it the isolate.
Wait till they change the definition of purified, then you'll have to start over.
yeah, correct, yes. But David Crowe said that you've got to be, you know, to be very specific and use the word purify. So the isolate can be the sputum, which you know, makes no kind of logic and no common sense whatsoever. So David Crowe said use the word purify, and then in my future FOI request to the NVRL, National Virus Reference Laboratory in Dublin, Ireland, I use the word purify, and in relation to SARS-CoV-2 virus, mumps, measles, rubella, et cetera, et cetera. So really what I'm challenging, you know, what this whole challenge is, you know, that viruses don't exist, so therefore there's no need to vaccinate against SARS-CoV-2. There's no need to vaccinate our children. We can get rid of vaccines altogether. My thesis in a way is in the book is that basically modern medicine is like a cult, and it's got a lot of dogmas. And the kind of central dogma of modern medicine is that the germ theory of disease is correct. That the germ theory of disease is correct and viruses exist. That's their theory. That's their core belief. And then everything else, all the other dogmas of modern medicine, like metastasis and cancer or whatever, all follow from the germ theory of disease, the immune system, kind of the concept of an immune system, which is used to explain why some people, when exposed to alleged germs, get the disease and others don't because they have a strong immune system. But that would explain why the germ theory of disease does not always work in all cases. And it goes on and on and on. But the germ theory of disease is the central dogma of modern medicine. And that's what I mean by the biomedical paradigm, all the belief systems that make up modern medicine. It's a belief system.
Yeah.
And really what it is, is trying to break that belief system. And I mean, unfortunately, I do believe that it's the, you know, I think you shared me a hashtag. It was unexpected deaths.
Unknown causes is my Facebook group. I'm actually streaming to my small Facebook group, Unknown Causes. I only have permission.
Sudden death.
Yeah. Well, I'm also a friend of the founder of Died Suddenly. He's the one with 200,000. So I decided, even though I'm against Facebook and everything it stands for, I just wanted to put my oar in the water and maybe catch some of the leftovers from the Died Suddenly group. And I even attracted today Northern Tracy, who's obviously always on Facebook. And so she got the alert probably to come in to Facebook and watch it. So she says, hi, my buddy James. Hello.
But, okay. Hello, Tracy. All right.
Yeah, so there you go. I guess you go way back there. So, I'm not in the Died Suddenly group because we have to be careful with our words. He doesn't want to lose his group. But
sure, yeah. But mm-hmm. but I think it's the Died Suddenly and all of these kind of sports guys in their mid 20s or 30s.
Yeah.
They're all of a sudden very healthy guys that are dying. pilots, you know, there's a lot of pilots, you know, much higher than normal death rate, et cetera, et cetera. And there's something else. There's been a thing about, you know more about this, but all these doctors in Toronto, Ontario, that have died unexpectedly.
I have to tell you that I'm a fakeologist. So my number one enemy is the media and those that create the media. And I'm kind of concerned that the doctors are not real doctors. Now, I'm not an investigative journalist or reporter. I don't go to the scene, but I do follow people that sometimes pretend or are investigative journalists. And there's a pretty foul-mouthed guy in New York City that called the Trillium Hospital, which is on the other side of the city from me. And it sounds like that guy doesn't really work there, if he even exists. So there's a lot of atrocity propaganda going on both sides. And this is a high-level PSYOP that we're in, which is why I'm super interested, because I study PSYOPs and media fakery. So I want to be cautious. I'm not going to say I have no proof that any doctors are dying. As a matter of fact, you'd think the doctors would be a little smarter because they probably get to see the end results, the real stuff, and they won't report on it because they're in the cult, as you say, the cult of the medics. But I don't think those are real doctors based on all the phony victims that I've investigated all the way since 9/11. So I just
Fair enough. But I think certainly, you know, I've been following a few things, like certainly excess deaths are up.
Yes, I believe that.
I personally think that at some point this has come out. If the life insurance companies, like, for example, 18 to 64-year-olds, working-age people, if they're dying much more, even like a 10%...
is a catastrophe, yes.
Yeah, but a 40% increase is like, you know, a couple of thousand year event. It just doesn't happen on a bell curve. It's very, very unusual.
No. Well,
then you're starting into, there must be another reason, right? And I think, I'm not sure if we get a breakthrough in that one. I hope so, because this whole thing has to be brought to a conclusion, you know? And obviously that's why, you know, I'm doing this interview. That's why you're doing it as well. We're trying to get the word out.
Yeah, that's why I do. I used to do my show weekly because I talked about 9/11, JFK, and other PSYOPs. But now, because we're in this COVID thing, I believe it was back on 3/11/20 that I decided to go on the air more frequently. I wasn't working as much as well because things got cut back. But then I just thought, well, I'm just going to talk about this every night, even if it's for half an hour, just to go over the day's events, because there's so much. And most people are saying the same thing, but as a fakeologist, I know the whole thing is a PSYOP fakery, and I think people might find my perspective valuable. And I'll interview the same people that are a regular alternative media person will interview, but I'm going to do it from my bent, because I am super suspicious of the whole thing, everything, including viruses and vaccines. And that's what I've been spending a ton of my time with. And that's why I reach out to talk to people like you who've been talking about this for way longer, this specific topic. So that's my perspective on that. Oh, and the call ended. Okay. Let me just give a background to what we're doing here. James has been doing interviews for a while, and I heard him on David Crow, and he was using a mic that was built into his video thing, and he was really echoey. The sound was really bad. I almost bailed listening to him because it's so hard to hear on an echoey microphone. That's why I use a microphone that you yak into. So then I said, give me your phone number. I'll call you. Now, of course, I forgot to say, give me your landline, because I just thought most people use their landline. So he gave me his cell phone number. So I had to set up international calling, which is more expensive. And so I called him because at least that forces him to speak into a microphone on his phone. So actually it sounds better than it was on his Echo phone. But then he just let the beans, he spilled the beans that he has a landline, which most people don't have anymore. But I guess if you are from an older person, you might still have a landline. So that's why I said, give me your landline, because I bet you that line's going to be crystal clear. And so I called. So obviously the phone has dropped twice on his cell phone, which, you know, cell phones can drop. I don't usually drop cell phone calls, but who knows where he is and what kind of phone and all that kind of stuff. So now I'm going to email him to get the landline, because that shouldn't cut off. But he just sent me an email to the landline. So I'm going to send him an email back saying, give me the landline number. So sorry about that, guys. And while I'm waiting for him to reply, let me just, what can I tell you guys? It's been a big weekend for audio. The Rick and Rollo show was on Saturday morning. And the great part about the Rick and Rollo show, Tracy says, I have a landline and even an old proper phone with a dial, not the buttons. Whoa. Wow, you are ancient. You are showing your age. Can you do me a favor, Northern Tracy? Can you, what can you do here? Can you put, can you see if you can connect your name to the Facebook Restream? No one's done that before. I think if you go to chat.restream.io.facebook, I think if you click on that, let me just see if that works. I think if you do that, chat.restream.io/Facebook, if you do that, I think, okay, I got his landline now. Okay, here we go. So we're going to dial his landline, see if that works. Wow, he's got a lot of fours in it. And how do I dial? See if this works. Oops. I think I got it right.
Hello, Tim.
Hey, now I can hear you. Let's try an old-fashioned landline.
Okay. Can you hear me now? Is that okay?
Well, that's pretty good. Okay. We're going to give up on the cell phone
on
now. I guess after 10 minutes, something happens.
Yeah, it seems to cut out every 10 minutes.
Okay. Well, the only reason I didn't ask for a landline is because I didn't think anyone had one anymore, but you kept yours from the olden days.
Yeah. You said you're 55. I'm 58, so I'm a couple of years older than you. So,
yeah,
maybe that's it.
I got rid of my landline a long time ago, but maybe that wasn't such a good idea. So, but it's okay. I got so many phone lines now, I can't keep track. So where were we?
Yeah, I mean, like I think we're at the stage where, you know, that hopefully even the doctors are beginning to realize that there's a problem. I don't know if they are.
Yeah.
But in general, I don't think, you know, certainly I've got contact with some doctors, and yeah, no, they don't get it. And I think the only way
breaks
through.
Don't you think they're in a big pickle too? If they did get it, why would they tell you? What if you're a spy? This is a war here.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you've got people like, for example, Andy Kaufman, who have, he's given up medicine. So, Andy Kaufman, who else? Yeah.
So he can speak.
He can speak. Dr. Tom Cowan.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe, I don't know if they're, you know, and then in New Zealand, you've got Sam Bailey and her husband, Mark Bailey.
Yes. They've
given up.
They're out of the system, you know, too. But if you're in the system, you can't talk, I don't think.
No, you can't. You know, you're dead right. You can't. You will be, you lose your license to practice if you challenge the germ theory of disease, or you challenge the fact that viruses don't exist. Then you'll be ridiculed and cast out.
Yeah, especially if it is a cult. You see, that's the thing. Like, you could say to your doctor, this is how you'd have to do it. And I had a doctor once, because I was always asking about boosters way back in the day, because I'd heard about it. I thought about it. This is about 10, 15 years ago. And I'd always ask him, and he would say, no, you don't need it. But I think today you'd almost have to say, listen, blink twice if you believe in this. And that way, that way the doctor could literally deny anything that you said or asked him to do, because he'd have no proof. You'd have no recording, and he could say you misinterpreted my blinks. But honestly, that's how you'd have to deal with it as a doctor. You can't confess to anybody.
Yeah, or you lose your life. But I mean, I follow this guy, Dr. Ricky Gerhardt-Harmer. He's dead now, a few years, and I'm pretty convinced he's correct about his five biological laws. And basically, you know, if the germ theory of disease is wrong, which I'm 100% convinced it is, and also that viruses do not exist, then really and truly what it means is about 95% of modern medicine is scientifically and medically wrong.
Absolutely.
And really, what modern medicine is brilliant at is broken bones. If you break your leg skiing or whatever, and they could fix that perfectly, you're in a car crash, acute medicine.
Bone setter.
Surgery.
Bone setter, actually.
Bone setter, yeah. Yeah. They're brilliant.
Yeah, I just watched. Yeah, let me just interrupt one more time. I just watched probably the most popular video right now, and I asked if you'd heard of Purnima Wah. Purnima Wah, she's an Indian woman who's lived around the U.S., and she's super hot right now. They're going after her with a vengeance, and she talks a lot like my other favorite female truther. Virus truther, and that's Northern Tracy. She's a straight talker, and I really like to get Northern Tracy's take on her as well, because they're going after her with a vengeance, saying she's a fraud, her degree doesn't count. But she was interviewed by Lee Merritt, who's an orthopedic surgeon, or as she said, a bone setter, because it's sort of one of the only kind of legitimate things left in medicine that's been left standing.
Yeah, and really, so yeah. So basically, to answer your question, it's not going to come from within, from the medical profession. I would hope, though, that it would come from what the doctors do is they are bringing a learning off a lot of information and regurgitating it. They're absolutely fantastic at that, and they do it brilliantly. That's how they get through medical school, but. The issue really is the key point is the virologist, the microbiologist, for example, and they're the people you've got to try, you know, that I think we need to try and reach out to, like the microbiologists that work with, say, so-called giant viruses that affect C. algae, for example, and they do exist, and they're about 150 to 200 nanometers in diameter. For example, the SARS-CoV-2 virus is meant to be 150 nanometers in diameter. So if it's possible to purify what's called a giant virus, or what Lanka would call a beont or biont or a mini spore, because he doesn't like to use the word virus, because virus means poison in Latin, and it means a pathogenic virus. So that, he's obviously saying they don't exist. But if a marine biologist that has and apparently thousands of these giant viruses, let's use that language at the moment, have been isolated, have been purified, biochemically characterized, diameter measured, etc. And if one of those guys could say, well, how come nobody's done this with any alleged pathogenic virus like mumps, measles, rubella, SARS-CoV-2, or HIV? I think they're the people we need to reach out to.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry.
Again,
I'm sort of exhausted with the whole virus, no virus debate now. I honestly think it's a bit of a rabbit trail to send people scurrying down a... It's almost like, when does life begin? It's just one of those endless debates, like the abortion debate. It can't be won because we're talking about things that are invisible. So it's like saying... It's like chasing unicorns, I think.
No, but the viruses, like, my focus has been, it's not like chasing, unicorns are mythical creatures. Viruses, the point is that that there are entities, like organisms that have the same dimensions and the same characteristics of all alleged pathogenic viruses. For example, bacteriophages, right? The model for viruses comes from bacteriophages, and they do exist, and they have been biochemically. So bacteriophages do exist. Giant viruses in the sea or in lakes do exist.
I've never heard of giant viruses, actually. That's sort of news to me, but
yeah,
okay.
Okay, that's the marine brown algae Ectocarpus silicosis virus that Stefan Lanke purified. It was called a giant virus because it was from, I think his one was about 150 nanometers, whereas all regular viruses have a diameter of 20 to 150 nanometers.
I've also heard people argue about bacteriophages, whether they exist or they're another construct. As well, even this last video I just finished watching before I talked to you with Purnima, I think they might have been questioning bacteriophages, and we might just be looking at the polymorphic structure of the bacteria, how it just changes shape as it needs to adapt to whatever job it needs to do.
No, but that's correct. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with that. So
okay.
And I've just looked in the book. I do explain that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I do explain all of that. That the model for viruses is bacteriophages, right?
Yes.
And bacteriophages were discovered in the early 1920s, I believe. So when bacteria are dying suddenly, they form these kind of, if they lose nutrients, they can form spores. If they die suddenly, they form what's called mini spores, or these bacteriophages. So yeah, they metamorphose into bacteriophages, and then if the living conditions improve again, then the bacteriophages turn back into bacteria. That's the way it works.
Okay.
And the reason why they were called bacteriophages is because a bacteriophage means eater of bacteria. So bacteriophages were believed to have eaten the bacteria, so they're believed to destroy the bacteria. But all it was when the living conditions for the bacteria deteriorated, they formed these mini spores or bacteriophages, and when the living conditions improve again, they reform into bacteria. So that's it. It's metamorphosis. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good.
But the bacteriophages are the model for all alleged pathogenic viruses. So it is possible to purify a bacteriophage, and many different types of them have been, thousands of them have been purified. It is possible to purify so-called giant viruses, as the one that Stefan Lanke discovered, marine brown algae, Ectocarpus silicosis virus. Thousands of different types of them have been purified. And it's also possible to purify exosomes, which have a similar diameter to all alleged pathogenic viruses. So pathogenic viruses, people have been saying, that, it's too small. But the point is, the question that I've been asking is, if it's possible to purify bacteriophages, if it's possible to purify exosomes, if it's possible to purify these giant viruses in seawater or whatever, then why is it not possible to purify pathogenic viruses which have similar type diameters? And that's it. It's really that simple. And the technology is there to do it, if they're willing to apply it. And now what Stefan Lanke is doing right now is he's gone through a whole series of control experiments which kind of prove that the whole concept of virology is just completely wrong. But he's going to tremendous detail. But viruses are not unicorns. They are pathogenic viruses are unicorns. They do not exist.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is if they did exist, it would be possible to purify them. And that's my point. And that is the whole point. I've been running these FOI requests since, I don't know, by 2006. So
And the next very important part of it, they would also have to prove that they're contagious and cause disease, which that would be two extra steps that there's no way they would be able to prove either.
Yeah, correct. I mean, there was the Henley Koch postulates, which was, you know, which this guy, well, Koch kind of finally modified them from Henley and called the Henley Koch postulates or the Koch postulates. So it's basically the idea is that if you've got a pathogen, the pathogen exists in a healthy subject, exists in a disease subject, but not in a healthy subject. So say you've got, for example, bacteria like tubercular bacilli, they do exist. Somebody who's got tuberculosis, tubercular bacilli are present.
I also heard it the other way around. If they have those bacteria, they may not have tuberculosis.
I'm going to get into that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the whole point. So the whole point is that if somebody's got tuberculosis, they've got tubercular bacilli, right? But and it is possible to isolate them and purify them and culture them. That's number Koch's postulate number two.
Yeah.
Number three is if you injected, say, if I drank or ingested pure tubercular bacilli, will I get tuberculosis? No.
Right.
Okay, I won't. And that experiment was done by a guy called Max von Pettenkofer back in the early 1900s or late 1890s. He did the experiment. He drank a whole bunch of cholera bacilli, and he didn't get cholera. So the whole point is that in relation to bacteria, they do exist. They have been isolated, purified, dimensions measured, et cetera, so they do exist.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. But the question is, the experiments have been done, I do mention this in the book as well, that if I ingested, half a liter of cholera bacilli, right, I should get cholera according to the germ theory of disease, right? Now, I might get sick because I've taken in so much of this bacilli stuff, gunge, basically, but I won't get cholera, I won't get tuberculosis. But then then they have a new construct called immune system, saying, well, maybe I've got a strong immune system or something, you know? And the point, so...
Yeah, I don't believe in the immune system either.
No, it's another construct.
Yep.
The germ theory of disease is it doesn't work for bacteria, and it doesn't work for viruses, because viruses don't exist. They've never been able to purify them, and it's really that simple.
Yeah. Like I said, I really urge you to go listen to this Purnima Waugh. She really has broken things down really, really well. She claims, and she could be a phony plant as well. I don't think so. I find that I just have to listen to someone for a length of time, maybe a few interviews and maybe a few challenges to see how they respond to challenge. Since they put themselves out there, they have to be able to take it, I suppose. But I'm pretty convinced that she's the real deal, because she's saying all the things I believe in. Now, does that mean I'm just using cognitive bias to accept her views because they align with mine? Well, I've taken a long time to get to my position, and I've done way more research than most of the population. Maybe not you, but you and I are in a very tiny fraction of a percentage that knows what we're talking about. And we are fully qualified. So I really invite you to listen to her, because just her ideas about just the whole history and phoniness of virology and the germ theory, it's just lie upon lie, and they've had 150 years to build on it. So we're not going to tear it down in a couple years. It's just so ingrained. And now, of course, the financial system is involved, where they have completely tied the financial system to this paradigm. So it is a Herculean task to break it, I think. They never had the finance system behind them now, but the elite have found this as a fantastic opportunity to use this as an excuse to re-implement the whole financial system, which they're doing.
It's funny you mentioned it. I wrote another book, I published another book there just a few months ago called Real Honest Money.
What's it called? Real what?
Real Honest Money.
Real Honest Money. Is that on Amazon?
It's on Amazon, yeah.
Oh, okay. And, are all your books on Amazon? Sorry.
Correct. Yeah, they're all on Amazon.
Okay, so they're all for purchase on Amazon. Okay, I gotcha.
Okay, but the kind of thesis of Real Honest, I've been studying the monetary system for, like, you know, I think the money system is the key point in all of this.
Absolutely. Without it, this thing would be over.
Yeah, but
let's be honest.
My thesis in that book is, right, it's how we can reform the current monetary system. Mm-hmm. And but basically, what I think they're doing is that they know that the current monetary system is going to collapse, and they are preparing a new monetary system based on carbon credits. And that's where the whole global warming scam comes into play. And carbon credits will be the new international currency. And they're getting us all to buy into this whole, trying to get persuaders to buy into this whole idea that we'll use, yeah, we don't eat meat anymore and all that type of stuff. And we eat bugs or whatever. And the humans are a threat to the planet. And the answer is there could be many billions more humans on the planet, and there's no problem for the planet at all. And so the whole global warming thing is a complete scam. And I think the pandemic scam, they're using this belief in the germ theory of disease and the existence of viruses to see how we react to lockdowns, etc. And I'll be honest about it, you know, I've been very disappointed in Ireland in how people just rolled over and they all wore masks and stuff like that. I didn't wear any masks.
It's not just Ireland, it's the whole world.
But it really rolled over in Ireland. I can say in Ireland, the Republic of Ireland completely rolled over. Northern Ireland, there's slight cultural differences. There are cultural differences. And Northern Ireland, not so much. And England, not so much again. You know, they got rid of all that stuff in England a lot earlier than they did here in Ireland. So the English were more kind of clued in on it. For example, I was in England and, you know, nobody was wearing a mask. And you cross the border into Scotland and you were told to put on a mask, you know. It's just really weird, like, how culture, there are cultural differences, believe it or not, all over the place.
No, I do believe it. But overall, people are very similar. But, yeah, of course, there are differences for sure.
I think this whole thing is like a dry run for the climate change scam, you know, the global warming scam, you know, to implement this new carbon credit thing. But basically, you know, I think the way out of it is, you know, and that is another belief system. People just believe in climate change or whatever it is, and they don't want to fly airplanes, or they all think they're doing good and all that type of stuff. But they've been bought into the whole thing. But in relation to my focus really at the moment, I've just come back. You know, I haven't written that book. I've done it, but now I'm back into the whole business about the virus not existing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the key thing that will challenge the lockdowns, which will challenge every single government in the Western world. Because I mean, I don't know. Certainly in Ireland, I can say for a fact that every politician in Ireland has to resign. They're all completely incompetent.
And they'll just be replaced with another bunch of World Economic Forum people, or the people are going to demand AI or a world administration where if they trust the WHO and the centralized administration to just send an agent to run the country like a babysitter, that's what they're getting. That's what's next. Believe me, what's next.
Yeah.
And all the foot soldiers at all the borders and airports, you're going to be dealing with a computer or a kiosk. You're not going to argue with some guy who may be browbeaten by the guy before him. You're going to be arguing with a computer. And then if you want a person, you press a button and the camera will come on and somebody from a distant land will start arguing with you. There'll be very few human beings at checkpoints, I think, because they know people just know they're going to lose against a robot.
Yeah, but look, I'm actually quite confident. I think we're going to beat them. I think, for example, I've seen stuff in China where the Chinese are locking down major cities and people are being
It's called COVID zero.
Yeah, and I think people in China will revolt against this at some point.
I'm kind of the opposite. I think Chinese, or the Han Chinese especially, are some of the most compliant in the world.
So, no, they clearly are. No. I mean, look, I'm not going to argue with you. They clearly are. There's no debate about that.
Okay. So I don't think they're going to revolt until you start starving them.
I think they're being pushed so hard that they will revolt. I do believe that. But I agree with you, they're the most compliant people in the world.
I have reports
that
there's 25 million on standby to take over, to replace Canadian workers. I've heard that rumor too. So when the Canadians stop working, or just at a point where they say, oh, we need so many of these workers, so many of that, they are going to have some kind of permit system or a fast track to citizenship, and they are going to be over here in a jiffy. I think that's everywhere. I think especially if there really are an excess of Chinese people, which I'm not positive there's really a billion people there, because I just think that's the next plan. And Europe is going to get Africa. I think a lot of this, just speculation, of course, just trying to fit. Like, I'm always trying to see the big picture, because I don't mind talking about viruses if they exist or don't exist. But I don't think it's going to work for the average person to convince them. I think that's why I like talking about the big picture. And I think a lot of this lockdown, a lot of this whole transformation of the world is in anticipation of Africa. Because their population, I do believe, is growing at 2-3% a year annually. So, and they're getting more power, more energy, more knowledge because of the internet. So I think that is the ticking time bomb, the European elite that run the world. I think that is the ticking time bomb that they want to put a cage over, because otherwise the elite could lose control. Because if I have technology for money, crypto, technology for knowledge, internet, technology for power, say solar, and all the other things like natural gas, which is easier to find natural gas and develop, Africa won't need the world. They can be self-sufficient and then perhaps have expansionist interests in the future. So I really think that they took advantage of the West because we're fat, we're weak, we're already drugged up already. Most Westerners would have no problem with experimental medication, especially if they see a threat. So they are, a good chunk of them are amenable to this whole experimental biological injection. They don't even care it's experimental. And I know they've forgotten by now. The time has made them forget that this is still an experiment. They don't even realize they're the guinea pigs at this point.
Yeah, no, but I do know a lot of people here, certainly here in Ireland, who got the vaccines, and they refused the boosters.
That's good,
because the boosters didn't work. So I mean, I think there's you know, I think there's an increasing skepticism about the whole thing. But I agree. I mean, at an overall level, I think what, for example, Putin, what the Russians are doing, and the Chinese with this kind of multipolar world order will take care of the unipolar world order with the U.S. and Canada, and then all the Western countries basically following suit from the U.S. I think that's over and done with. They've lost. They're going to lose heavily in Ukraine. They've already lost in Ukraine. The Ukraine is finished militarily. It's just a mopping up operation from what I can see with the Russians. And then really the West have lost. There's going to be a massive energy crisis in Europe this winter. And I think...
Oh my God, Europe set up? I'm stunned.
Yeah, but there's going to be. I mean, I think Macron has been hanging on by a thread in France. At some point, the French rise up. I was hoping the Canadian truckers would do it, but the French will rise up. I think the Germans could go if the Germans' heavy industry all has to shut down because they've got no energy and there's massive unemployment. There's a whole series of things that are going to happen. So I think we're in a you know, the West has backed, you know, the whole climate change, you know, carbon reduction scam. You know, they've gone down. They've backed the wrong horse. It's wrong, scientifically wrong. But I still think on the, you know, in terms of trust in authorities, trust in that they're competent and they know what they're doing. I think the existence of the virus, if you want to know the truth, I think that is a key issue, because if that can be shown that pathogenic viruses do not exist, if we can get some leading scientists, for example, there's a guy in England, Mike Yeadon, who used to work for Pfizer.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely clear what his position is, but he said respiratory viruses do not exist. I'm not sure what his position is as regards all viruses, all alleged pathogenic viruses. But the whole point is that, in my opinion, this is the central dogma of modern medicine, of the biomedical paradigm, the germ theory of disease, and the existence of pathogenic viruses. And if that can be shown to be wrong, that this whole lockdown thing was wrong, then you know we just need to get rid of all of our governments all over the world and have a proper reset that will benefit everybody, not the great reset which the WEF want, and absolutely not.
Now, your book, The Real Honest Money, do you have crypto in there as well? Is that part, do you see that as a solution?
I mentioned crypto, but I'll be honest about it. I can explain roughly what my solutions are if you wish.
Okay.
At a high level. At a very high level, basically that at a high level, what I'm saying is that in the Western world at the moment, 97% of the money supply is created by private banks as interest-bearing debt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I was saying that's a scam. I explained why that's a scam, how it historically occurred, how it happened. The banks, commercial banks, came to create over 97% of the money supply. And the solution is that the government should create 100%. So government saying Canada creates the Canadian dollar, the Bank of Canada create the dollar and the Canadian coins, the coinage and the dollar bills, Canadian dollar bills. That's about less than 3% of the Canadian money supply. 97% of it is a credit. And basically, that's a scam. And if government created 100% of the money supply, which is more or less, which is what happened with Lincoln, with the greenback, he created the greenback, and that's how he was able to finance and win the Civil War in the U.S. So that would be the solution at a national level. That's called sovereign money at a national level. And then at an international level, I think there's going to have to be some kind of a gold standard. At the moment, we're on the dollar standard for international trade. And so the U.S. dollar, that's why they've used their military to enforce the U.S. dollar. Like it was used for international trade, and now the Russians don't use the dollar anymore for obvious reasons, because they know the U.S. is trying to...
they can't. They really can't.
They're trying to dismember Russia, and the Russians are now coming up with an alternative. They've backed their ruble with gold.
Right.
They're doing the deals with China and other BRICS countries and Iran. All of these countries that have been sanctioned by the West are, you know, so all of this stuff is going to backfire on the West in a big, big way, you know? And in effect, we've brought it on ourselves, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe not deliberately, say in a case of small countries like Ireland, but a small country like Ireland has backed the US and the UK in their insane war against Russia. We've backed the wrong horse big time, you know, and I think we need to start dealing with reality, you know.
Yeah, I'm not convinced anyone's at war with anybody. When it comes to the globalists, I really think they have their tentacles everywhere. Now, it's in their best interest to simulate a war, because that's how you generate tons of money and power and control and profit and fear. But I'm just not convinced that Putin and Xi Jinping, or whatever his name is, in China, are on their own side, personally. I'm just not sure. This world of deception it's just really difficult to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. No, look, I'm not going to pretend that is Putin, a new saint or whatever, but I don't think he's the evil bogeyman he's made out to be either, by the way.
No, I don't either.
I'm 100% convinced about that. And certainly, if you compare him to Trudeau or Boris Johnson or Olaf Scholz or Macron or any of the leaders in the Western world or the Irish Prime Minister, he is leaps and he's head and shoulders above any of them, you know, in my opinion.
Well, he's had a lot more practice. He's been in there for 22 years as well. And that is sort of a benefit of not having to leave. You get pretty good at it. I just think it's the only war is between the elite and the rest of us. That is the only ongoing war ever.
Correct.
I
agree with that.
I don't think Putin is here to save the world. He's just the foil. You need two sides. Otherwise, it's boring. Otherwise, it's obvious which are the two sides of war. If we don't have an enemy, a common enemy, then we quickly add things up and figure, wait a second, we're at war with the elite that are telling us what to do, that are accumulating great wealth while impoverishing us. They're happy that we're not making a really good go at this capitalism thing. They're happy to just to take over and say, listen, here's your dinner, here's your bed, we'll take care of everything, and you will never be able to accumulate any kind of wealth in our new feudal world, our new digital feudal world. That's fine. We'll take care of you. Yeah. And a lot of people will go for that. Let's be honest. A lot of people would love that.
I've been shocked at the amount of people in Ireland that actually will believe that. It's unbelievable.
Well, how much, if you talk to a young person, how much can we pay them to sit on the couch? The number's not that high. You don't need to pay that much for them to sit on the couch, never go out. We'll bring your goods to you. We'll bring your food to you. And you don't have to do a damn thing. But you have to live in this box, 200 square meters. That's it. That's all you're getting. You won't have a car. You won't be able to travel. We'll give you, you're going to get one steak a month or equivalent, chicken or pork. That's it. That's the plan. Oh, and three changes of clothes per year. There will be no more fashion, no more fashion whoring. And if you need excess protein, it's cricket powder. They've told us that. This is not a conspiracy. No. This is in all their documentation. The Great Reset, the Rockefeller Lockstep, Reset the Table. Have you read that one? That's a beauty. Rockefeller Reset the Table, redoing the food supply.
Yeah, well, I mean, the point is that they telegraph their moves, that they tell us what they're going to do. Mm. It's online. Yeah, we know exactly what they're going to do, and we know what they're going to do with the whole global warming thing. And it's just a matter of exposing it, you know. And for example, I think Piers Corbyn in England, he's an independent meteorologist, and he wrote a great lecture that, and again, I have that in that book, Real Honest Money, as well.
Okay.
A great lecture where he explained, like, carbon is whatever it is, trace compound in air.
We're the carbon they want to get rid of.
Yeah, exactly. But the carbon dioxide in the air is like, it's a trace element, and basically the man-made proportion of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, 1 in 64,000 particles of the air is man-made carbon dioxide. So how that could cause global warming is incredible. It just can't. You know, it's impossible. So he's demolished it, in my opinion, Piers Corbyn. Demolished the argument against man-made global warming. And I think you're right. I mean, the future for our kids and grandchildren and humanity going forward is not very good.
No.
If the World Economic Forum get their way, absolutely. And that's why, you know, that's why I've written these books. That's why I'm challenging this. That's why I'm on your show.
Yeah.
Is just to say that I'm saying no. This is wrong, and this is not going to happen. And we've got to make sure that it doesn't happen.
And that's why I talk about it. That's why I put money behind it. I've got my own video platform called FakoTube, which is now mirrored in three continents: Australia, where I have tons of fans, so I had to put a server over there; Europe and North America as a server. So I've got my own video platform just so people can go there and see this kind of stuff. I'll put this interview on there as well, even though there's not a lot of video. It's mostly just your book on the screen, but people love video for some reason. Even if it's a static image, that's where they go. So I have to try and go. It's same with Facebook. I don't like Facebook. I don't last long there, but when I am there, I'll project into that awful, awful realm. But yeah, you've done a lot of good work on this book, and you're preaching to the choir here at my audience. We talk about this all the time. Northern Tracy comes on and gives her common sense approach to this whole viral, bacterial, germ theory paradigm that is... I'm kind of hopeful, and another reason I really like this Purnima, whoever she is, wherever she came from, she's kind of hopeful too that this whole coronavirus hoax reset, it could break the paradigm. It really could. Well,
I am convinced, right? I mean, that's why the book is called The Achilles Heel of the Biomedical Paradigm. It will break it. Viruses do not exist. It will break it. And then once if that can be broken, then we know that the germ theory is wrong and viruses do not exist. Then we can start questioning the whole climate change scam and then stop it and stop this carbon reduction agenda, which is destroying the West. And then just start on a sane kind of path for industrial development that benefits everybody.
Yes,
countries.
Yeah, more of are you familiar with the Canadian called Matt Arrett?
I am indeed, yeah.
He is, he's the only guy I ever heard talk like that with this, just use your national money supply to benefit.
Correct.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone really talk like that. I guess it's a Lyndon LaRouche thing. I never was really familiar with Lyndon LaRouche and his disciples, but I think Matt Arrett has picked up on that.
Yeah. No, I'll be honest with you. Matt Arrett, he's written. I've heard him on a show with V the Grilly Economist. I don't know.
He's on every show. Matt Arrett's on every show except mine. He won't come on mine, but that's fine. He's everywhere. He's everywhere. Yeah. He's so busy.
Matt Arrett is very good. Like, and his wife Cynthia Chung. I just listened to a few of their podcasts, and I 100%. I need to read his books. And I will do, but you know, he's excellent. You know,
He's figured it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's saying that there's no point in he's going for Canadians looking after Canadian government looking after Canadians and Canadian interests first and foremost, and the same for the U.S. government and every other government in the world, and working together in a cooperative manner, and that is the multipolar world order. And you know, I think we can, that this will be achieved, and hopefully it will be. Yeah. So, not even hopefully, it will be, because we've no choice, because the future that the World Economic Forum planned for us is horrendous, and obviously there's a massive depopulation agenda in there as well, which we all know about, on the Georgia Guidestones.
Yeah.
And again, the Georgia Guidestones were blown up. Be interesting to know who did demolish one of the pillars or blew up one of the pillars. I don't think anybody's.
It was like a really crappy tourist attraction, though. I know people like to build it up and make it seem like a big thing, but I think it was just sort of a tribute to Ted Turner. He probably paid somebody a few $1,000 to just chisel away and put them up, because it was sort of near CNN headquarters there in Georgia. But I know it gets pumped up a bit. But yeah, Matt Arrett, I'm going to put a link to his website. He's everywhere. So if you don't have to look far to get Matt Arrett on a talk show, but he has a good he has a good Substack there. So I put a link to that. That's show note number 4.
And he's got an interesting view of history as well, of how we've got to where we are today.
I love it.
He made Canadian history
interesting, which I didn't think was interesting.
Absolutely, and exactly. But I need to read his books and understand exactly his perspective. But certainly, I think the solution is quite clear. Of sovereign money at a national level, and it can work perfectly well. And we don't need to have countries at war with each other all the time. We can live as brothers and sisters on this.
Well, the only thing I can say about the Great Reset and the World Economic Forum is they had a plan, or they have a plan. Now, where is an alternative plan? No, there is no coordinated effort to make another plan. See, that's where they have the huge advantage. They've been working at this since the 50s, the technocrats. Now their name is the World Economic Forum. So they've had a lot of time to think about this, and they have implemented their plan. It's already been implemented in steps, and now they have merged with the Agenda 21 concept. And now I think they're even going to accelerate it faster than their 2030 benchmark. I think they might have bumped it up a few years just because they know that this whole spell of the COVID hoax is going to wear off. Now, I don't think it's going to be the virus challenge that everyone is placing their bets on. I really don't. I think that's just too abstract. And again, you can't see any of this. The average person can't see it. But what the average person can see is, I think, the damage done by the vaccine. Now, right now, there's not enough people that believe or even consider the idea that it's the vaccine that's killing or hurting them. Like, I have a neighbor who had rapid cancer as a young person that just came on right after they took the injection. That's not normal. I don't personally talk about it with them. But I think if they could see the connection, which I kind of doubt they do, but I don't know, maybe they do see it. Until that day happens, and I don't know when it's going to be, people are not going to stop. They're going to be stuck in the trance. But I think that is the linchpin to this whole thing, is if people make the association. So if they make the association and they say, this thing is hurting us, and if they can make it a little further and think, what is the whole idea of vaccination all about anyway? Because they might just fall for a safer vaccine down the road. I mean, that's possible. They've war gamed this whole thing out. But if they can make the association that vaccines have never done anything except hurt people, and they've always come on the scene after the diseases that they're supposed to cure have long petered out thanks to nutrition and sanitation, then if we can promote that idea, then there might be a chance.
Yeah, and that's, again, that's all I've gone through all of that in the book, The Essential Seal of the Biomedical Paradigm. So, I mean, I think one thing is we can assume that these guys are all powerful. They are powerful. There's no question, nor doubt about it. They are extremely powerful. And, you know, they've captured, you know, the Canadian government, and there's, you know, Irish government, all the governments in the West are captured. They're all subservient to the WEF. But the point is we're independent human beings. And I think the excess deaths and injuries from the vaccines will force people to wake up. That's my opinion.
All right. Do you personally know anyone that's been killed or maimed by the vaccine?
No. I don't, but I do know, I have a cousin of mine who admitted that to me that she had symptoms of another condition that worsened after the vaccine, and she would not get the booster vaccine. So she's the only person that's admitted that to me. Apart from that, no, nobody.
You actually have to ask people, I think, because they do know people, but they don't really make the association either.
I think you're right. A lot of people, if they're bought into the kind of modernist and the biomedical paradigm, they just assume vaccines are safe and effective. But I just think that the damage done is so significant with excess death rates and excess kind of children having myocarditis and stuff like this. That at some point there has to be a breakthrough into mass consciousness that there's a problem with the vaccine. I think that's probably step one, that the vaccines are dangerous, they're toxic. And then maybe step two is what I would go for is the necessity for vaccines. So why vaccinate against the virus if you cannot prove that it exists? And that's a key point. It's not an ephemeral point. It's a key point. If viruses don't exist, then there's no need for vaccinations against them. Simple as that. and then the whole kind of medical thing starts to go, and then hopefully then we start people start questioning the scientific justification for the carbon reduction agenda, the green agenda, the global warming scam, and all the rest. So it's a matter of I guess it's a matter of critical thinking, you know. And we need to apply real critical thinking to find out, you know, to challenge this. And it can be challenged, and it will be challenged, you know. And these guys, the World Economic Forum is just you're talking a few thousand people max at the very top end of the pyramid,
right?
And and
plus all their corporations. You see, that's the other thing. They brought their corporations with them. So if the president of MasterCard wants this to go through, that's a big problem.
Yeah. But, you know, but we just have to keep going. What can we do?
Do you talk to Christine Massey at all?
Yeah, I've been in email contact with her. Yeah, absolutely. I haven't spoken with her, really, but I've certainly been in email contact with her, and she's doing great work, yeah.
Yeah, she's. Who else do you follow or listen to in your travels?
Well, I suppose like on the virus issues, Stefan Lanke, without a shadow of a doubt, and obviously, I've Christine Massey, the Baileys in New Zealand, and Andy Kaufman and Tom Cowan on the whole virus issue. And then obviously I do follow the German new medicine of Dr. Rieke Gerhard Hammer, the five biological laws. I do follow that, and I'm getting more and more into that all the time. So that's kind of a new. So basically, like the thesis of my first book, The Ultimate Conspiracy of the Biomedical Paradigm, is basically once the germ theory of disease is understood to be wrong, and then the viruses do not exist, then we have to come up with a new idea of medicine, and that would be these five biological laws, which is basically, pretty simply, is most illnesses are caused from within. You know, they're not caused, you know, apart from, you know, if you drink or eat poison food or whatever, or you know, radiation from external radiation from whatever. Apart from that, you know, most diseases are caused from within, biological shocks. But I won't go into that in any more detail. But it's an alternative view of medicine.
Actually, you should come back and we should talk about German new medicine, because I don't know who there is out there. I've never really heard of it. Only sort of.
There's a lady very close to you in Toronto called Isadora Laker.
Is she current? Is she still doing this kind of stuff?
Yeah. No, she's around. Yeah, and she's got a website. I think it's called New Medicine. I just forget the exact website address. www.newmedicine.ca. But Isadora Laker is based in Toronto, and she's a very experienced German new medicineist. So she would be an ideal person for you to have on the show to explain the German new medicine. Absolutely.
Yeah, I see. It's gnmonlineseminars.com. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, yeah. No, Isadora Laker in Toronto would be the person for you to talk to there. She's very, very, she knew Dr. Rieke Gerhard Hammer personally. You know, she met him quite a few times. So she's been involved in it for a long, long time, you know.
Yeah, because I really know nothing about it. Really nothing.
No, but she's definitely the expert. She's a practicing therapist in Toronto, and she's certainly an expert in that area. Absolutely.
100%. So the medical system leaves them alone? They don't like competition.
Yeah, but I guess she doesn't say that she's competing with the medical system per se. She just does it on her, she's an alternative practitioner, as it were. But she doesn't challenge them that way, maybe. But she just gets on with it and does it quietly and does it effectively. And, yeah, you know, so certainly I would say to you, make a contact with Isadora Laker. She's, you know, she's been on a few talk shows, and she's very, very good. She's very, very good.
What does she think of the scamdemic? Does she dare comment on it, or would that just be bad for business?
Yeah. She knows the virus. She knows the viruses don't exist. So,
yeah.
And she's done some videos with Stefan Lanke, so she knows that there's no proof that pathogenic viruses exist. And Dr. Rieke Gerdhammer, when he was alive, he said that he suspected he didn't exist, but he wasn't certain. But obviously, Stefan Lanka has proven that. You can't prove something doesn't exist.
That's right. You can't prove a negative.
Yeah, you can't prove a negative. It's impossible. It's a logical fallacy. But what you can do is you can say that there's no evidence. You can say that the people who are saying that viruses do exist are unable to provide any evidence of their existence, so therefore you could say that they don't exist. So absolutely, and that's what Stefan Lanka has spent his life doing. And I think that's, if that can be overthrown, that the idea that viruses don't exist, the fact that they don't exist, then modern medicine can be overthrown, and then we can start maybe question the whole climate change thing and really question our governments about everything, because everything is up for grabs, in my opinion, particularly in the West. I think that in the West, I have a sister of mine who worked in Africa and Asia, and she said the Africans in particular are much more suspicious of government, whereas I think, to use kind of like pejorative language, maybe white people, for example, black people in England are less likely to take vaccines, much less likely.
Yeah.
I understand that in the U.S., I don't know about Canada, but certainly in the U.S., black people are much, much less likely to take vaccines than white people. And white people are, we've been conditioned to believe in the, that our governments are,
benevolent.
They're all correct.
Yeah,
exactly. That they're benevolent. Exactly. That's the key point. Whereas in Africa and other Asian countries, they're under no illusions about the benevolence of their government. They know they're all corrupt. They're under no illusions. And whereas, unfortunately, I think we in the West are under massive illusions about the benevolence of our governments, and we think that they're the experts, and we let them get on with it, and they're not benevolent at all, far from it.
Yeah, that's why I say Africa is, if the elite can lock down the West using the West's wealth, and then have that spread to places like Africa, that's where there could be a real fight. Because I agree with you, Africans have a long history of distrusting the colonizers, and I know Bill Gates is the latest colonizer of India and Africa, and I think his reputation is now pretty terrible in those areas. So I agree that they understand the agenda, they understand the depopulation element to it, but their populations are still growing, so that means they probably are resisting a lot of the depop shots.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think I think there's going to be the final chapter of my book, the Achilles heel of the biomedical paradigm, is about the Great Awakening, and I believe
right.
We are in the Great Awakening. I've also had the Great Awakening in my first book, The Ultimate Conspiracy of the Biomedical Paradigm, back in 2007 when I wrote that book. So I've been on about the Great Awakening all the way along, and I think this is all part of the Great Awakening. Viruses do not exist. The germ theory of disease is wrong. 95% of modern medicine is wrong. The whole climate change agenda is 100% wrong. It's a con. It's a scam to get us into this carbon credits to replace the current monetary system, and a depopulation agenda. And that's the real horror behind it. And I think it's just a matter of understanding that that's their plan, and saying, no, it is not going to happen. We're not going to let it happen.
So you're in Northern Ireland now, but you're from Ireland?
I'm from the south of Ireland, yeah. Ireland is a small little island, but I'm from Dublin. I guess I grew up in Dublin, but I live in Belfast, Northern Ireland.
Can you just travel freely, or is there any problem at all going from one part to the other?
No, for a whole host series of reasons, there's no... I mean, you drive across the motorway, and you the same motorway, and you're in miles per hour in Northern Ireland, and then you cross over and you're in kilometers per hour in the Republic of Ireland, and there's no checkpoints, there's no nothing, just seamless travel. So you wouldn't know you're crossing a border, but it's for obvious reasons, and it's impossible to have it would be, because of Irish history, if you had customs points along the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, it would restart the troubles. They would all be blown up within a matter of weeks, and you would have a massive uprising on your hands. So that can never happen.
So the history of the troubles is still in people's minds? That's still a thing that could easily be set off?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. 100%.
Is that right? Because people, Because a generation or two generations have gone by at this point.
Yeah, no, it's still there. Yeah, I mean, like, basically, I mean, it boils down to two very simple things. A very simple thing is you're either British or Irish,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. You know, what is your nationality, British or Irish? Some people might have a bit of both, but the point is, it might claim to be both, but it's which passport do you have, you identify with, all that type of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, look, it people have strong opinions, but one way or the other, but as long as there's, I mean, I moved up here from the south of Ireland 17 years ago because I felt the troubles were over, and I live here, and I still feel that it can stay. They don't need to restart again, but believe me, all of the elements for the troubles to restart they're all there, 100%, absolutely. But nobody.
So, are you a bit of a foreigner in Northern Ireland, being from the main Ireland?
Yeah. Like in a sense that. I'm not really a foreigner because I'm Irish, but I've got a different accent. That is a completely different accent, Irish accent from Dublin, say, to Belfast. Northern Ireland accent is more like a Scottish type accent. But yeah, so they can identify straight away. I'm a Southerner, you know. But like if you're a Southerner in the US. People mm-hmm. can tell straight away, or if you're a New Yorker or somebody from Boston, you can tell the accent immediately. So the same way in Northern Ireland, but you know, I mean, it's the same. It's different. It's a little bit. It is different. You know, I can't say it's the same because it's not. It is different. Like where I live, there's British flags flying. You know, 100 meters from me, all over the place. British Northern Ireland flags all over Belfast. So that's a sign of terror. They're marking their territory.
Wow.
You would never see British flags and stuff like that down in the Republic of Ireland. So it's all there, but I don't think nobody wants to go back to war. I mean, I certainly hope not anyway.
Yeah, but as an Irish guy, Southern Irish guy in Northern Ireland, you can't get into any kind of trouble. Is there anything you can say to set people off? Or do they look at you funny?
Yeah, you can set people off quite quickly.
Really?
You just know. Oh, absolutely.
I can't. Yeah. It's just. Yeah, yeah. It seems like such old history, but it's still a tinderbox. That's crazy.
Oh no, absolutely. Like I mean, it's even language. Like for example, there's a city in Northern Ireland called Derry.
Right.
Derry. But if you're like a unionist or a British person in Northern Ireland, you'll say Londonderry, right?
Right.
If you use that word Londonderry, that will set off. That would have set me off 20, 30 years ago if you used the word Londonderry. Oh, absolutely. But now I live here so long, it doesn't bother me one way or the other, you know. But I would always say Derry. But I mean, you know, but like it's phraseology, you know. There's all phrases. Like I use the term, if you say Northern Ireland, if you're a real strong Republican, Irish Republican nationalist, like a Sinn Féiner, they would never say the word Northern Ireland. It's the north of Ireland. So your whole terminology is, you know, language is very, it can be, how you use words can be used to separate the two sides. And yeah, it's amazing. It's incredible, actually. It's basically, it's tribal. If you want to know the truth,
yeah.
I've come to that conclusion. It's tribal. It's just two white tribes. And from an outside point of view, it's almost impossible to tell the difference. But the two tribes living up here know the difference very well.
But are they bringing a lot of third worlders into Northern Ireland and Ireland? And wouldn't that unify the existing residents?
They are. Yeah, that's correct. They are doing that. But no, it won't unify them because, you know, no. They're it's two tribes up here, two white tribes. But, you know, but in fairness, though, people do get along pretty well nearly all the time. And as long as, you know, there's no, you know what to say, not to say. And yeah, it's no problem. I've never had a problem up here. So that's all I can say.
What's going on with the energy over there with electricity? Because it seems like a different world from over here. We're not hearing anything. Are they jacking up your electricity in the name of COVID Russia? Yeah, I mean,
the gas prices are going up 30%. Electricity prices are going up 30 to 50%. our fuel prices for gas, I guess what you guys call gas for cars and stuff, has gone up, but it's gone down again, actually, funny enough. It was nearly £2 a litre.
Yeah, it's gone way down here.
Yeah,
for gas.
Yeah, for gas.
Well, not for diesel. Diesel's still pretty high.
Yeah, but it's I mean the European countries have to deal with Russia and this war, you know, in the Ukraine, one way they're, you know, just an end to sanctions on Russia, you know, and just get back to normal, you know, get back to realpolitik, to use that phrase.
But I'm hearing that there's shops that are getting bills that are 5 or 10 times for energy and they have to shut down.
Yeah.
Is that, is that possible?
I don't know, but that's what I'm hearing too as well, that a lot of small stores, again, this is all part of the World Economic Forum plan, but a lot of small stores will end up shutting down, small shops, pubs, restaurants, and all the rest. So, yeah, I mean, we're in for a winter of discontent in Europe, big time, you know, and it's all there. And all the elements are there for a massive winter of discontent. And then hopefully we can start getting rid of the governments that we have, you know, because they're all completely and utterly corrupt, you know.
Yeah, but if you don't have an alternative, I've even heard that in where I live in Canada, there's another potential election going to be called again. We just had one a year ago. So these guys have a lot of tricks up their sleeves on a coordinated worldwide scale right now. I'm just it's a kind of an exciting video game that we're in, to be honest with you, because you just don't know which way it's going to go.
But as your compatriot Matt Aird said, you know, I mean, there are ideas out there for to solve this, you know. Mm-hmm. And they mightn't be well known, and but I think ultimately what has to happen is the powers that be, the governments have to be overthrown, and then we have to start listening to people like Matt Aird and all the rest, and start doing new ways of operating. But the existing guys have to be overthrown because they're just criminally wrong about everything.
But I still think crypto, for some kind of crypto, is part of the solution. Just like the internet broke the information locks and gatekeepers, I think that if we can get a crypto that people buy into and believe in and think it's fair and real, because most people probably don't think it's real, I think that's part of the solution. So I thought maybe that would be more part of your book, or you'd be more of a just more interested in that. Maybe you are, and I'm not getting that.
I could go into that in detail with you if you wanted to, but like, crypto is like the blockchain behind crypto, I have no problem with it, and that could be used for digital currency issued by the on a sovereign money scale. Absolutely no, there's no issue about that. But like, the whole point about crypto I could go into that in more detail at some other point.
It'd be interesting, because I think that is really part of the solution.
But the blockchain behind crypto, here's the point, just at a very high level. If you're a Bitcoin miner, if you mine Bitcoin, and you've got the computer technology and all the rest, and you can create it for, I don't know, say 5,000 a unit, and then you can sell it for 10,000 a unit, that's great.
Right.
Making 5,000 for every Bitcoin you create.
Okay.
That's fantastic, right? But my only point is, why should the miner benefit, or the early adopters benefit from, say, Bitcoin in particular? Bitcoin is the biggest crypto. Whereas if you have a sovereign money issued by the national government, then every citizen benefits equally, right?
Mm-hmm,
So I don't have a problem with the concept of crypto. I don't have a problem with the blockchain. The blockchain behind crypto is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But the question is, who should benefit from the issue of crypto?
Yes.
Of currency. And certainly, who should benefit from the issue of the national currency is, I think it's the people in the country. So Canadian citizens should benefit from the issue of Canadian dollars. You know, whereas, you know, with crypto, it's only a very small group of people that benefit, the early adopters and the miners. They benefit greatly. But, you know, crypto is an alternative. I wouldn't ban it. It's an alternative to the current fiat system, which is going to collapse.
Guaranteed,
with hyperinflation. So if you've got savings, put them into crypto, and you probably can't go wrong, really.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Yeah. You know, crypto is a very broad word as well because it describes anything digital. People get it so mixed up with the CBDCs that are coming down the line that they want to give us. So it's mass confusion for most people, I think.
Yep.
All right. Well, that was a good call.
Okay.
I appreciate you struggling with the technology. I'm glad we got you on the phone because a lot of people say the landline is a very good sound and you're very easy to understand and hear. So that's fantastic. We got that ironed out.
Okay, good, Mom.
So I put all your books on the show notes. This is episode 605. And I suppose that's the best way to get them. You don't have a website, so they're going to have to get it, I assume, through Amazon is the best way.
Correct. At the moment, yep. Absolutely.
All right.
Thanks very much for having me on the show.
All right.
It was a very broad-ranging topic.
I'm interested in the whole big picture. I like viruses, but I don't know if you're exhausted by the whole discussion, but it seems it's been well talked over. But I know.
Okay. It's been well talked over, but the issue is the medical profession believe in it. Like most medics, doctors, nurses, guys working in ambulance, they all believe they're all wearing masks. Still, they all believe in the in viruses and the germ theory of disease. So, I mean, it's a live issue. In some ways, like I have to say, I got out of it for a while, and then Christine Massey took over in Canada. She started up in Canada doing her own thing, and she's kind of re-energized me.
Oh, really? Good.
She's re-energized. I have to say that she has re-energized me just because I think the virus issue is a key issue, you know. And I think if we get that one across the line, then we can start maybe challenging other things like the climate change, carbon reduction agenda.
Does she have purify in her language or isolate?
I'm sure she has Purify. Yeah, she knows about all of that. Yeah, Purify is the that was David Crow from Alberta who told me about that one. Purify is the technical term, but they've abused the word isolate. It means nothing to I've seen the scientific papers where they say isolation of a SARS-CoV-2 virus, but when you read it, they haven't isolated the virus at all. You know, when you read the paper or go through the paper, all they've done is they've identified using PCR, they've identified bits of DNA, and they believe that these belong to the SARS-CoV-2 virus without ever having purified the virus in the first place. You know what I mean? So this whole virus issue is key, I think, to unlocking the scientific mess and the whole lockdown thing that we're in. And maybe if that can be kind of seen to be false, and it is false, but can be accepted to be false, then maybe we can question the climate change agenda. And it is equally as completely nonsense. You know, the carbon reduction agenda, and just get to everybody's in favor of a clean environment, you know, clean air and clean water and all the rest. Absolutely. But the green agenda is just criminally wrong, you know.
Well, it's a totalitarian agenda.
Absolutely.
They've taken it and added 99% to it to just complete total domination because they just don't feel that the average person can behave themselves and handle themselves, and they have to control everything. So, there's a lot of people that agree with that, unfortunately, especially young people, and they're the ones that are going to take over.
The young people are. They are brainwashed at the moment, but it's just a matter of just revealing the truth, you know, and just keeping at it and not giving up. Just keep at it. That's the main thing.
Yeah. All right, James. Thanks so much. Good call.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
I'll stay in touch. I'll have you back if you want to come back anytime.
Okay. No, we'll do. We'll do. Good mom. Thank you very much.
All right. Appreciate it. Take care.
Cheers.
All right. Cheers to you. Bye-bye. All right. There goes James McKinsky of Ireland, Belfast, in fact. Good call. Yeah. Thanks to John Wantling. He's a train guy. I don't know if you're called foamers over there in England, but he's the one that got in touch with me and sent me a few emails, and he got me on to James. there are so many people out there, and I really rely on leads. Anytime you give me a lead, I'll try and follow up on it and have a good chat and just bring more and more people to this topic and make more people aware that there's a lot of people like James. He's been doing this for a lot longer than the COVID thing has been with us. And I think it's important to give, he doesn't even have a website, so give these people a voice on the air and share their info. So everything is in the show notes here today. This is, like I said, episode 605. And why don't I go look and thank my latest donor? Of course, the monthly donors, thank you. 33 a month, Zylflex, Ezra T, Daniel, John R, Leah, Pepper, Dirty Benny, Anders, Harvest Moon, Stratman, Waterman, Chris, Go Find the Others, Bing, Gary G, Jan Van G, Simon L, Mark T, Robert K. I think this is updated. I might have to double check it because I don't usually get cancellation notice. When people bail, I don't usually get a notice. But I do notice the single amount donations. Just had a donation recently from Per B. That person, I believe, is in Sweden and sent over 100 euros. And also Nick V, 33. And Fake Ake, another 100 US dollars. And Matt S. And, of course, Anon. And thanks to the Bitcoiner, who's anonymous, that sends many links to me and also is sponsoring FakoTube. And I had to use some of that for FakoTube because one of the things I do on FakoTube is import quite a few videos, as you can see here. And for instance, I imported this video, which I highly recommend. This is the Purnima Waugh interview with Dr. Merritt. And one thing I wanted to see in the description was where the source video was and description. So I have to pay the developer FakoTube directly if I want to accelerate that change, because he has many things he needs to change and constantly be updated. So on the top where it says description, you should see source video and source description. Actually, I'm going to tell him to make it a separate category. We got category, which is the category I assigned to the video. Then the description, which is imported from the original description. That's why it has all kinds of stuff here. She put this description here, I believe. I think. So this information here will probably be up here. If you want to get more info or see where it came from, he's going to insert that. So I had to pay for that, and that's where your donations normally go, including the ongoing hosting of FakoTube. I really appreciate all the donors, and FakoTube has definitely been quite a success, I would say. Tons of views here, and maybe I'll close out. Why don't I'm going to put some of the audio chats on here. We have all the audio chats from this weekend. And you can see we've been talking a lot. The Rick and Rollo show, Frank and BV came on after. Why do I have two Rick and Rollos? Oh, sorry. This is the after Rick show. So this is just Rick and other people. And then he calls this Last Leg. And we didn't put the participants in because we haven't had a chance, but you're just going to have to take a chance and see if it's the people you like. It takes time to make descriptions, so we haven't done that yet either. So you can take a chance and download it or just play it off FakoTube. You can go to fake11.com/audio or your favorite podcast player and grab all the audio as well. What else? Maybe I'll play this clip from Purnima and then maybe Bill Gates, the eugenicist. Maybe I'll close out with that. So here we go. We're going to listen to Purnima, and this should load pretty quickly. As you can see, it comes up real quickly. And there you have it. So what is, maybe, wouldn't it be funny if, my guy already implemented it. Maybe he already implemented the change to FACO2, and let me just check here. So let's click here.
There is no SARS-CoV-2, hence there's no COVID-19, hence there's no variant, there's no gamma, no delta.
Maybe he's already done the change. And there you have it. Where does it say, and there you have it on here? And there you have it. I'm kind of curious now if he's already fixed this. And there you... Okay, so I don't know where those words came from. Unless I got it from somewhere else. Well, that is the original video. I guess. Yeah, I guess it is. And there you have it. Okay, so maybe he did put it in. Now, I just uploaded this one. Let's see this one. So maybe he already put it in. I'm not sure. Let's see. Well, there's the original Twitter thing. Man, he's fast. Man, when you pay him, he moves fast. So is this where I got it from? So this brings up Twitter. Yeah, maybe he's already put it in. Interesting. Oh, maybe he's already implemented my request. So that is the original video. Okay. Oh, that's cool. Well, let's go back. Let's play this clip. This is the 2-hour audio I listened to today with the very controversial Purnima. So we'll play this now. Thanks for joining in tonight, this afternoon. And we'll be back tomorrow. We have many guests. Let's just take a look here. You go to fakeologist.com/live. You'll see the schedule in Google Calendar for now. But tomorrow, so today was James. We have nobody tomorrow, which kind of surprises me. What day is it tomorrow? September 7th, September 8th. So September 8th is Uncle Vigilante. So tomorrow is September 5th. I don't think I have anyone. Wednesday, I have a refugee from Rhodesia in South Africa, Peter Wright. Not a fakeologist. It's going to be a non-fakeologist type interview. Thursday, we have booked with Died Suddenly. And that group has, let's see if we've got the Died Suddenly details here. No, we don't. You'd have to go to Facebook for that. Let's just see how many Died Suddenly members there are now. Let's take a look. Where is it? Groups. Died Suddenly. 175,000 members. Wow. Okay. And you see a million different sad stories here. My sister's friend dropped dead while they were speaking a couple of days ago. My friend tried CPR on her without success. Massive heart attack, no prior health issues, 50 years old. Also, my ex-brother-in-law dropped dead at work earlier this year. Again, a massive heart attack. He was 59 with no prior health issues. As far as I know, he was quacked. Fresh graves. Got some grave walkers. Crazy. Graveyard visitors. Lots of 50-year-olds. 50 is a really tricky age to be. Wow. My pure-blooded? What? Here's a pure-blood? That's strange. All right. So that's Thursday, so that's Died Suddenly. And yes, we don't have a guest tomorrow. I think I might be wrong about that. I think Mark Tokarski is coming by. Oh no, he's next Sunday. Okay, September 11th, we're meeting with him, and then Human Vibration's going to be on. I'm going to switch Tuesday schedule to Mark or to Uncle Vigilante. All right, so here we go. Let's play a little Purnima, 5-minute little presentation here, and then we'll do Bill Gates eugenicist. So thanks for listening, and here she is.
There is no SARS-CoV-2, Hence, there's no COVID-19. Hence, there's no variants. There's no gamma, no delta, no Omicron, and there's certainly no damn monkeypox. Monkeypox is essentially a side effect of the jabs, folks. There ain't no new virus. If you've been injected with any of the Pfizer or Moderna or whatever, Johnson & Johnson, any of those jabs, you get monkeypox. Essentially, you're detoxifying from your skin. So I was contacted by my lab principal investigator, and who's the chief scientist of the lab, and they said they got 1,500 COVID-positive samples from Southern California, and we got a huge $1.5 million grant from the NIH to do the isolation of the novel. We had 20 lab members, and we started the process of isolation and purification, characterization, and causation the way I described it should be done, the correct way, with the Koch's postulates and all. We started in late April 2020, and we went all the way through September of 2020. I mean, that's several months. And the reason is my PI, the principal investigator, wanted the test done three times. She wanted us to do the isolation done three times on the 1,500 samples, because she kept saying, when the first time when we did it, we didn't find anything. We just found cellular debris. We didn't find SARS-CoV-2. We didn't find flu. We didn't find anything. Okay. Because she was upset that we hadn't isolated SARS-CoV-2. She was very much wanting to isolate and find this novel virus. So we did it three times and we found the same thing, just cellular debris under the microscope the way we did it. And then, you know, once we did the Koch's postulates, we used ferrets instead of mice. And so we had 100 ferrets that we injected this material into. And then you always have to have a control group. That means you take a control group of another 100 ferrets and you inject them with saline solution. When we injected the ferrets, okay, this is very interesting. The ferrets, if there was something really deadly like a virus or something that makes people sick, you know, which they say all these people had runny noses, high fevers, pneumonia, blah, 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 headaches. Well, the ferrets should also get those same symptoms. Nothing happened. All were healthy. They were moving around, very active, vibrant. In fact, their appetites increased. Some of them got kind of chunky. And 10 ferrets lost a little bit of fur on their tail, and that's about it. Losing fur on your tail is not SARS-CoV-2. So she sent emails to other universities saying, this is what we found. We contacted 100 universities in this country, of which only 6 responded. They said, all right, we'll replicate this whole process exactly the way you did it. They took about a month and a half to do their studies, and they found the same thing we did. That's all they didn't find. They didn't find SARS-CoV-2. They didn't find the genome. They didn't find anything. I mean, nothing was found. 7 universities then called the CDC. Robert Redfield was the director. I call him the Fauci's colleague and Trump appointee as CDC director. We called them and we said, hey, these are the findings. Okay. 2.5 hours on a Zoom call back and forth. And he says, just call it SARS-CoV-2. I don't care what you found. You found something else. You have to call it COVID and SARS-CoV-2. If you don't call it SARS-CoV-2, you're going to lose your job. You'll never work in a lab again. I'll make sure you never work in a lab again. Your lab will be closed down, underfunded, not funded, et cetera, et cetera. We said no. Our group decided to go ahead and publish our findings, and we went through 21 journals. The last journal that we went through, Science, Nature, PLOS One. The last one we went through was in October of last year, October 2021, the Danish Medical Journal. We decided to go outside the country. We thought, okay, maybe if we go to Scandinavia, they're usually open-minded. First, they said they gave us a provisional yes, and then they said no. I think the Danish government probably put some pressure or something. I don't know what happened. Between like June of 2020 through early August 2020, after we found what we found, and the CDC said you have to call this SARS-CoV-2, blah, 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 we actually started calling the CDC and asking them to send us an isolated, purified sample so we could test it, okay? So we could actually do the causation studies and Koch's postulates. Since they didn't believe that our samples were any good. We said, hey, why don't you send us just one or two samples, right? First, they said they can't send it. Then they said they didn't have any samples. There's no records of any samples, et cetera, et cetera. So, and then after 2 months, they just started hanging up on us. Finally, in April of 2021, our lab was raided by the FBI. Everything was confiscated, computers, paperwork, drafts. Fortunately, me and four other people had saved everything. I have everything saved, including the actual paper copies. I kept those, you know, the drafts, all our work, writings, everything. So we have all of that. We've saved that. We can still publish.
Hello, I'm Bill Gates.
Fertility rate is actually shrinking.
Slowest growth of the American population since the 1930s.
The lowest rate of population growth since the nation's founding. Fertility rate dropped by nearly 60%. If this trend continues, sperm counts could reach zero.
In 2020, the birth rate dropped to its lowest level.
The population growth rate coming down quite a bit.
Will women just keep overpopulating the world?
The faster family size goes down and keeping children alive, would that create more of a population problem?
Throw in a pandemic,
people are less to have babies in uncertain financial times.
For the first time in human history, we will be deliberately culling ourselves by having fewer babies than we need to reproduce.
Europe is basically losing people every year.
Sponsored by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
It's now come way, way down.
Sterilization has become one of the most prominent means of birth control.
So even if they wanted to turn it around, they can't.
And why wouldn't they?
The shock of global population decline, and we're delighted.
Issues related to population, reproductive health.
There's also been a huge decline in teenage births. There are less unintentional births than ever before.
My dad was head of Planned Parenthood.
Humans across the globe are becoming increasingly less fertile as toxic chemicals accumulate in our body.
Next time, we're really going to have some good vaccines for the next pandemic.
There will be another pandemic.
Absolutely.
That rate drops.
First, we got population, new vaccines, health care, reproductive health services. We could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
The presence of social media plus a pandemic is a combination that's never been tried before.
If anything kills over 10 million people in the next few decades, it's most likely to be a highly infectious virus. If the population would get so big, maintaining the environment is going to be impossible.
To shoot and stop, but you move so fast that I can't.